WHYY.
This is Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan, in for Marty Moscowain. It's a busy political season for New Jersey. There are special elections in Trenton and Newark today. Voters are in the process of choosing new mayors. We've also got a primary election June 3rd, which could generate more than the usual amount of interest in primaries. Three congressional seats are open in the 1st, 3rd, and 12th districts. And later in the show, we'll take a look at some statewide issues. Our guests today are Charles Style, political columnist for NorthJersey.com. Welcome, Charlie.
Good morning.
And Bridget Harrison is professor of political science and law at Montclair State University. Bridget Harrison, nice to have you on Radio Times.
Nice to be here, Mary.
So let's look first at the mayoral elections in Trenton. There are six candidates, five men and one woman, most of them are agreed that Tony Mack, the former mayor who was removed from office this year after being convicted of bribery and extortion, left the office, left the city's image a mess. It is a big job for the next mayor. No, Bridget?
It is an enormous job for the next mayor. And, Mary, that seems to be a common theme throughout the mayoral elections that are occurring in the state today. It is no accident that we're talking about urban elections that have been separated from the typical partisan elections that occur in most New Jersey municipalities. And the cities that are seeing these races today, Paterson, Irvington, Trenton, Bayonne, and of course Newark, all are facing enormous budget shortfalls, real serious challenges in terms of crime and education. And, whoever wins these elections, they sure have their work cut out for them.
Let's focus once again on Trenton. Yes, Trenton needs money. A number of police were cut back a few years back, so crime is up. There was a record number of homicides last year. Fewer than half of Trenton's high schoolers graduated last year. And a number of the candidates, Charlie, are eyeing the state worker presence as a possible resource. Is this a new idea?
State worker presence in terms of tapping them for today's vote?
Well, in terms of actually, for instance, Councilwoman Kathy McBride is thinking maybe a wage tax. She calls it a contribution, but on state workers who are, their home is Trenton. That's where they work. That's where they go every day. And as some of the candidates have complained, they're using our services, our police, waste disposal, et cetera, but they're not paying for it.
I think it would be immensely unpopular and suicidal for the Democratic Party in Trenton, which is already, at least for the Democratic Party, which relies heavily on state workers for their machine, what's frankly left of it here. Without the state workers, I would say they make up about 10-15% of the population in Trenton, at least back when years ago when I covered it, it was higher. So I don't think that will fly. I think the real issue is whoever becomes the next mayor has to work with the lame duck Governor Christie, who has really just cut off the state's relationship with the cities or made it very, very, he's very stingy, frankly.
Well, in Trenton in particular, was that simply because Tony Mack was in office?
I don't think that helped. I think that clearly was a problem. But I think, Chris Christie, a combination of things. He's facing budget shortfalls from the economic meltdown from the minute he came into office. So that was one thing. But he also wanted to establish his kind of fiscal conservative bona fides by appealing to his base in the Republican suburbs and nationally by imposing a kind of policy of austerity on the cities. Get your fiscal house in order, and maybe we'll throw you some more money. But the days of emergency pipeline from the state to the cities, or generous pipeline from the state to the cities, is over. And I think that's had some dire consequences for the city.
Bridget Harrison, I imagine the candidates are not going to want to hear that they have to wait until Christie's out of office to get more money from Trenton.
Well, I think you're right, and I think that Charlie is right. I think that throughout the state what we've seen is that the governor has, in many situations, antagonized Democratic administrations, but has certainly not been a kind of force that previous administrations had been that could be relied on. And, you know, people may think of that as a good thing or a bad thing, depending on where they are politically and also where they are geographically. But I think in Trenton, the primary focus of the six candidates running has been the elimination of corruption. I think that the legacy of Tony Mack has been such that even before you start talking about the very serious issues that, that Trenton is facing in terms of crime, in terms of urban decay, and in terms of their schools, I think that many of the candidates recognize that the house, the government house, needs to be cleaned up, because you can't really tackle any of those issues without tackling the disease that has run through City Hall. It just doesn't work. And so, you know, the likelihood is that we will not elect a mayor in Trenton today. The likelihood is that if none of the six candidates gets a majority, then the top two will have to run in a runoff election. But I think after that point, we'll hear a much more clearer articulation of those candidates' visions and perhaps even a differentiation in how they will attack some of the city's problems. But I think right now what we're hearing out of Trenton is, a lot of, we got to end this corruption. We have to really clean up the city in terms of its government.
And that image should, I would imagine, not take too long to get past, because a number of these candidates have very substantial resumes. Once the candidate is chosen, once the mayor is elected, how do you even begin to tackle the ingrained issues that a city like Trenton, for instance, and Newark faces? It took a long time for these cities to kind of get to this point where you have the high crime, where you have the blight, and et cetera. Where do they start, especially if money's not forthcoming from Trenton?
You know, I think that that's a really difficult prospect, and we only need to look to Newark to see how entrenched this issue is. I mean, you had someone, you know, like Cory Booker, who was mayor, and obviously enormously talented, with tremendous kind of intellectual resources, and who was able to attract philanthropic money that no one in the state of New Jersey has seen. Yet today, Newark schools are still in shambles. Yet today, the crime rate, particularly in some areas of the city, is higher than it has ever been, at least the homicide rate. And so I think that, you know, in speaking about how systemic those issues are and how tricky they are to solve, particularly in an era in which both the state, the urban areas, and also the federal government does not have the money that could help solve these problems, it really is a tough nut to crack.
Charlie Stahl, your thoughts?
Well, I thought Bridget hit on a very important point, though. I think it really does start with cleaning out City Hall. Right now, Trenton is an absolute laughingstock. For almost three decades, it was run by a mayor, Arthur Holland, who was considered, you know, a model of good governance, if you will. And then Doug Palmer was a more of a business-oriented mayor that succeeded him. This has been an unmitigated disaster. The city is—it's completely. There's no political or civic structure that's operative right now, and they really need to establish, project this image that we've cleaned house, we're starting fresh with new people, and we're serious about it. I don't think you can really move forward right now on any of those fronts, education or crime, anywhere, unless you establish some credibility on East State Street.
And with that, then they can attract monies from private groups.
People want to invest. They want to make a bet with a lot of these, with the city. And they're just not going to come here if they think they're going to have another parasite running City Hall.
So let's go to Newark for a moment in the race to choose a mayor after, of course, Cory Booker moved on to the U.S. Senate. We've got Shavar Jeffries, a law school professor and former assistant state attorney general. He's up against Councilman Roz Baraka, who is the son of poet Amiri Baraka, who passed away earlier this year. Baraka is also a school principal. It's gotten ugly there. Charlie?
I'm sorry, you came in and out there. I apologize.
I'm sorry, too. The race between Shavar Jeffries and Roz Baraka is hardly a friendly competition.
Oh, no, you're really, what you're seeing there is this is a fight for not only the future of the city, but who is going to run what power base is going to run the city. Are you going to hand this over to Jeffries kind of represents a kind of an extension to a certain degree of the Cory Booker regime. He supports charter schools. He has a lot of that money behind him, private equity and charter school money. And he also has some of the same political to Essex County infrastructure behind him. Or do you go with, say, Baraka, who is more represents sort of more of a traditional extension, frankly, of the Sharp James regime? Now, I say that with a huge caveat. Sharp James was indicted and went to jail. Mm-hmm. But part of that whole traditional Democratic ward machinery that has the support of the teachers' unions and other elements in Essex County that did not align with Booker. So you really have the winner of this is going to be entrenched for a long time.
That it just feels, if I were a voter in Newark, I would just feel kind of hopeless about now listening to this. The candidates arguing, and there's a long way to go. I mean, is there any way to push the process forward? And who might be the candidate, in your opinion, that would be to do that?
Well, I actually disagree. I think this has been a vigorous debate, and you have two very passionate candidates and with substantial followings, and you have Shavar Jeffries, as a former prosecutor, has that long history of tragic history from Newark, who is kind of a up from the bootstraps kind of candidate. He's a sort of a shining exemplar of a kind of the can-do spirit. And Baraka does have, the passionate following of, people in the South and Central wards. I think they both both sort of bring a passionate commitment to the game. So I don't think there's any despairing. I think it's really the tough issue for people is which future direction of the city are you going to place your bet on? But I think it's a good thing. It's a good problem.
I guess when I use the word hopeless, it seems as if we're discussing two cities, Trenton and Newark, and it's just going to take years to get them to a place where residents can feel that the schools are good, the streets are relatively safe, and the cities are on their way back. We'll talk more about that in just a minute here on Radio Times.
Sure.
We've got to take a short break. This is Radio Times on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan in for Marty Moscowain. We're talking about New Jersey politics. The June primary is in 3 weeks. There'll be some new faces heading to Congress. We'll be talking about that as well as Trenton and Newark and the races there. The new faces heading to Congress in the 1st, 3rd, and 12th districts. And later in the show, we'll touch on issues like Bridgegate and the gas tax and Governor Christie's popularity. Our guests are Bridget Harrison, professor of political science and law at Montclair State University, and Charles Stile, political columnist for NorthJersey.com. If you've got a question or comment, give us a call, 888-477-9499. Our email is radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times.
The Pennsylvania Academy of the Fine Arts is proud to support WHYY. PAFA presents the 113th Annual Student Exhibition, featuring over 1,000 works of art by PAFA's BFA, Certificate, and MFA students. It's an opportunity to view and purchase work by the rising stars of the art world. PAFA's 113th Annual Student Exhibition is on view now through June 1st. More details are available online at pafa.edu/ase.
There's a 5-minute rule at the WHYY News Department. If the news team spends more than 5 minutes at their morning meeting discussing a story idea, they know it's something that you will want to hear. I'm Marty Moscowain, and I'm asking you to consider a 5-minute rule as well. If you've discussed an issue you heard on WHYY for 5 minutes or more, take the next step and become a member, a supporter of WHYY. Pledge online right now at WHYY.org. Thanks very much.
I'm Robin Young. A young man from war-torn Africa turns wine glasses into song for solace and goes viral.
I was like, I'm going to be happy in the moment right now and do something and share some happiness.
That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
this afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan in for Marty Moskowain. And our guests this hour are Bridget Harrison, professor of political science and law at Montclair State University, and Charles Stile, political columnist for NorthJersey.com. If you'd like to call him, if you happen to live in Trenton and feel like telling us who you are voting for today, please give us a call, 888-477-9499. And otherwise, if you're in the New Jersey area, Philadelphia area, you've got some thoughts on these issues, you can contact us at radiotimes@whyy.org if you want to shoot us an email, or tweet us at @WHYYRadioTimes. Let's just take a quick look for a moment. And Bridget Harrison, I'll toss this one to you. At what Cory Booker did for Newark? There has been a mini renaissance downtown, but as we kind of checked in a little bit earlier in the show, there are still issues where, you know, police have been laid off and crime is up and too many kids aren't graduating high school.
Okay, so, I mean, how I think of the Booker administration, we just ended our discussion describing the difficulties that Trenton faces. And in my view, one of the chief accomplishments of the Booker administration is that there is now the potentiality to solve public policy issues like crime, like the failing schools. Before that, because corruption was so rampant in the city of Newark, there were those same problems, but there was no even momentum or idea that those problems could be solved. That is not to say that, you know, Cory Booker came in and everything got cleaned up in terms of solving those problems, but I think now and moving forward, he did accomplish things like generating revenue in terms of that mini renaissance that Newark will feel the impact of for decades to come. He also did more controversial things in terms of schools. Charter schools, both under Mr. Booker and the Christie administration, got a huge bump in the city of Newark. And I think in some ways that has been one of the kind of pivotal issues in this mayoral election, whether a candidate supports public schools or kind of thinks that the state and the city should focus their energy and attention on cleaning up the traditional public schools. This also has attracted a ton of outside interest group money, as well as the support of some of the state's most important power brokers mm-hmm. who have a vested interest in the issue of charter schools. But Booker also, I think, because, you know, he is Booker, did manage to bring in some of those philanthropic dollars to fix problems, perhaps not in a real systemic way, but to try and at least improve the lives of some individuals in the city. I don't think that you can point to any other mayor in the state, and it would be very rare to find another mayor in the country that was able to attract that kind of private investment for mm-hmm. an urban area. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, as I said a little bit earlier, in this era in which you have so few dollars coming into cities from the federal government and from state governments, mm-hmm. I think that many new mayors are going to have to look outside the box for those private solutions to these public problems, because the era of governments tossing money at schools, for example, or to fix crime, they're gone by the wayside.
Yeah. But, oh, Charlie?
No, I totally agree with it. I think that Cory, if not only his philanthropy, but his political fundraising, he went outside the traditional Democratic Party sources. And went to the Silicon Valley. He went to Wall Street, the hedge fund industry, and he set up a whole new paradigm for the city. Not only for, as Bridget noted, his own, you know, for the philanthropy to bring in new sources of money into the city, but also into his own political network. To launch him for, you know, for the U.S. Senate and maybe higher. I think he saw that as, you know, it was not only for the city, but for a rising star African-American figure
mm-hmm. of his charisma.
We're going to get
had to go beyond the normal pots of money.
Thanks, Charlie. We're going to get to the calls in just a moment. But I just one quick point here. It seems then that this might be a model for cities like Trenton and for Newark moving forward, because government funding is drying up in many ways, to go outside for funding, what Cory Booker has done.
Yes, I agree. And I think that was a point about New Trenton. They're going to need a new salesman at City Hall, mm-hmm. someone with credibility and integrity and charm. You're going to need all those skills to bring it together, not some, party machine guy, dour, guy who thinks he can just, show up over at the State House and mm-hmm. use his delegation of Democratic or, legislators to help pry money out of Trenton. It's just not going to happen anymore.
All right, let's get to the phones. Ed has been standing by patiently. Welcome to Radio Times, Ed.
Hi, I'm calling from Southern Jersey, so I'm not voting in the primary, and I'm a member of the Green Party. So I'm not particularly satisfied with what the Democrats or Republicans have done in office anywhere, including my own community. And the Green Party thinks that we have a far better policy solution to the problems of the cities, and it's based on a better understanding of the economics of taxation than the two main parties have demonstrated.
So in about 30 seconds, can you give me a bullet point?
The property tax has an optimum amount of revenue to be raised, and that should come from land only. The state of Connecticut has just adopted legislation to allow its cities the option to move to a land value property tax, and it's done so in cities like Hartford and Bridgeport, which were in the same situation as Newark and Trenton. And this is the one measure we believe should be the fundamental core of the policy choices that whatever party wins should pursue.
Thanks, Ed, for the call. Bridget Harrison, what do you think about that? Can we compare Trenton and Newark to Bridgeport and Hartford?
Well, I think that in some ways we can, but I think one of the difficulties is that in New Jersey, and there have been volumes written by this about this, but how we fund our public schools is a very large part of the problem that urban areas face, because with the urban flight that has occurred in most of New Jersey cities, that base of tax revenue has gone by the wayside. And I think what the caller was proposing, and I think that probably it would take an enormous amount of political courage from a political leader, but how New Jersey's tax structure, including its property tax structure, and how it funds its schools needs to change. That kind of enormous sweeping policy would probably, in the state of New Jersey, knowing its politics, have to take place incrementally.
Yes, glacially.
Yes.
All right, let's turn our attention to the congressional races in South and Central Jersey. Primary day is coming up June 3rd, 3 weeks from today. And we might actually see some folks at the polls, more folks at the polls this time around. We've got three open congressional seats. Let's look at the first district first. Rob Andrews, of course, left, I think it was in February, after nearly two dozen years in Congress. State Senator Donald Norcross, widely considered to be the front runner in this staunchly Democratic district. Charlie Style?
Yeah, he's, that is the Norcross machine has kind of just, the assembly line has kind of groomed and put him forward, Donald Norcross. There isn't really much of a thought that he faces any serious threat, which I find is interesting when we get to, say, compare that race to the 12th district here in Trenton, which is actually genuine Democratic competition.
Yes, State Senator Linda Greenstein, apparently the favorite there.
I'm not really sure what the favorite is. Frankly, Bonnie Watson Coleman, a state assemblywoman, former Democratic state chairwoman from Ewing, has the all-important preferred ballot position, or the line in Mercer County and the portion of Union County that's in the district. And Linda Greenstein has the line in the Middlesex County district, so part of the district. And there's a third candidate, Penda Shivakula, who is mm-hmm. an assemblyman. I think it really comes down to the turnout, and Bonnie Coleman has had a fundraising advantage. The only caveat for Bonnie, I think, though, is what we've been talking about, is the city of Trenton. Does the political chaos and anarchy there really pose a real challenge, get out the vote challenge for her?
If you'd like to join the conversation, I remind you the telephone number is 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And a tweet works, too, @WHYYRadioTimes. We'd love to know what you think about all this. The primaries coming up, the congressional races. I just want to spend one more minute on the first district. Is the whiff of the ethics scandal that has dogged former Congressman Andrews going to hurt the Democrats, do you think, Bridget?
I don't think anything can hurt the Democrats down in the first congressional district. That is how powerful the Norcross machine is. And so, the reality is that the first congressional district is a staunchly Democratic district by design. That was how it was gerrymandered after the 2010 census in the reapportionment and redistricting that occurred there. And, I know that Congressman Andrews resigned in the wake of these ethics violations. Honestly, I don't know that even would have hurt him running for re-election in this district.
Right,
I think that's how strong the machine is, and his support was. The timing of, Mr. Andrews announced his retirement from the House, and within an hour, Mr. Norcross announced his intention to run for the seat, and within an hour of that, I'm going to say, 24 Democratic elected officials in that congressional district announced their endorsement of him,
right.
And we just put a ribbon in on his head and delivered him in the House of Representatives, 7 months before anyone in the first district actually got to vote.
All right, well, there is a sizable Republican feel, too. Gary Cobb, the former Eagle and sports broadcaster, does he have a prayer? He's got name recognition.
He does. I would think not. I mean, this is George Norcross's backyard. He can deliver this, deliver this district in his sleep. I don't think that, I think that it is certainly the obligation of the Republican Party to launch as much a significant challenge as they can. But I think in this district in particular, it really is an uphill battle. And I think that is particularly true given the relationship between South Jersey power broker George Norcross and Donald Norcross. So, it's not just that this was someone who had kind of risen through the ranks, but, this is obviously a close personal relationship. I don't think that Mr. George Norcross will be sitting on his hands and allowing a Republican to walk in this district.
I would like to take a quick look, I should say, at the 3rd Congressional District before we move on to some state issues. John Runyon, another Eagles player, just decided politics wasn't for him, Charlie style?
Yeah, it was kind of surprising. He just got fed up within a short period of time. I mean,
second term.
Excuse me?
It's his second term, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. And so now you have this strange Republican primary between two out-of-district candidates, one Steve Lonigan from Bergen County, who's been a Tea Party / Libertarian presence in the state for quite some time, ran against Cory Booker last year in the special election and lost, although he put up a pretty scrappy fight. He said at the time, my career in politics is over, and then John Runyon announces he's out and Steve Lonigan has a new life, and he's running against this guy, Tom MacArthur.
It generally leans to Republican, this district, right? Although several terms back, we did have John Adler, the late John Adler,
that's right,
who held that seat and was a Democrat.
But I would interject the district, since John Adler passed away, the district was redistricted and became a bit more Republican.
Right.
But nonetheless, the Democratic candidate, Amy Belgard, has raised significant amounts of money. She's raised over $300,000, and while the Republicans are raising money, they're also spending it beating each other up. The other thing, of course, that we need to keep in mind is that this district includes parts of Burlington County. It includes kind of that swath across southern New Jersey above Atlantic County.
Mm-hmm.
And this is kind of getting to be Norcross territory. What we're saying is that Norcross, I think, is attempting to make some inroads, just as he had in Cape May and Atlantic County. There is the idea that perhaps with his enormous support, particularly in the fundraising area, that after these two gentlemen get done beating each other up, there may be the opportunity for a Democrat to walk into this seat.
Okay, we're getting closer to a break. I'm sorry, Charlie.
It's very odd that Burlington and Ocean counties could not produce any homegrown talent to succeed John Runyon. They had to rely on these two carpetbaggers, which is very odd.
Before we get to the break and move on to statewide issues, I have one question. New Jersey apparently has not elected a woman to the House since 2000. Might the drought end this year? And why has it been 14 years? Charlie?
It will end because the winner of the Democratic primary in the 12th district will most certainly is the odds-on favorite to win in the general election.
And that will remain Democratic, in your opinion?
It will remain Democratic.
Mm-hmm.
I can't give you a short answer on, or a pithy answer on that, other than I think it's a lot of people that end up running for Congress tend to be those who have been in the pipeline, career people who have climbed the ranks for many years, and over the last two decades, that's mostly been... This has been a male-dominated sport, and most of those who have surfaced to run for Congress are veteran males, and now we're starting to see that change.
Bridget Harrison, your thoughts?
Well, the secret for getting women elected is to initially get them elected, because, like many states, New Jersey tends to re-elect their incumbents, and when you don't have any women in office, our incumbents tend to stay in office. Chris Smith, for example, has been in office since
the early 80s.
Yeah, and so, you know, because we tend to redistrict to keep the party in power, these guys, and they are guys, they just don't move on.
No, they're
permanent. So even if there is a talented pool of candidates waiting in the wings, the chances of them getting that one nomination that will launch them into Congress, it becomes very rare. And it was gratifying to see both Bonnie Watson Coleman and Linda Greenstein, you know, step up to the plate. Both of them have had, you know, lots of political work to do in the past, and this was probably an unexpected opportunity, but both of them stepped up. And, you know, that in and of itself was gratifying to see that drought will be over.
You
know, that is really true point. Most of the incumbents
started in the 90s. Quickly, I've got a break
coming
up, Charlie.
Yeah, no, that's okay.
We're going to continue our conversation in just a moment here on Radio Times. Actually, I'd like to get to Bridgegate and Governor Christie. To our listeners, has Bridgegate tarnished his image? Give us a call, 888-477-9499. Tell us what you think, or send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. Tweet as well, @WHYY Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan, in for Marty Moscowane. Our guests are Charlie Style, political columnist for NorthJersey.com, and Bridget Harrison, professor of political science and law at Montclair State University. Be right back.
Thomas Jefferson University Hospital is proud to support WHYY. With a hospital dedicated just to neuroscience, Jefferson treats complex disorders of the brain and spine with advanced technologies and research. Jefferson's multidisciplinary team of neurology specialists devises individual treatment plans for patients with everything from aneurysm to epilepsy. Thomas Jefferson University Hospital. To make an appointment or for more information, the number is 1-800-JEFF-NOW or online at jefferson.edu. On the next Fresh Air, bioethicist and internist Dr. Baron Lerner talks about his new memoir, The Good Doctor. Lerner's father also was a doctor and came up in an era before advanced medical directives, when doctors often made end-of-life decisions without consulting the patient or family. The book compares the medical ethics and practices of the two generations. Join us. This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
a world dependent on electrons.
Nothing is smaller, faster, or lighter than electrons. For countries that want to develop, they have to have electricity.
Author Robert Bryce likes things that are small, fast, light, dense, and cheap. The key ingredients, he says, for a rational global energy future. But what are the trade-offs? Next time on The Takeaway from PRI Public Radio International.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times in Philadelphia. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan in for Marty Moskowain. Our guests this hour are Charlie Style, political columnist for NorthJersey.com, and Bridget Harrison, professor of political science and law at Montclair State University. We're also taking your calls. What are the political issues you care about? 1-888-477-9499. Radio Times at WHYY.org is our email address, or you can also tweet us at WHYY. Radio Times. Okay, so we all agree that 2014 has been a heck of a year for Governor Christie. Let's start with an update on Bridgegate, which, as most of us are aware, is the apparently politically motivated shutdown of portions of the George Washington Bridge for 4 days in September, caused massive gridlock in Fort Lee. When is it expected that the investigations, the state legislative panel, the U.S. Attorney's Office, when is that going to wrap up? Bridget?
Well, I think that we have months. In the case of the U.S. Attorney's investigation, it may not even be concluded by the end of the year. So I think that, and what we have seen is that those who are offering testimony, including right now the governor's spokesman, Mike Druniak, who is testifying before the legislative committee as we speak, as these individuals testify, it opens up the doors for further inquiry. So, you know, I think that, Mary, that the Democrats in the legislature, it's in their vested interest to keep this alive and well, and they will do their best to keep it in the media spotlight. And they'll also do their best to prolong this for as long as possible. And given the nature of U.S. attorney investigations, frankly, we just don't have any idea. You know, they're conducting their investigation. We know that that tends not to be a very short process. But really, realistically, I don't think anyone can give you an estimate in terms of when it will be completed.
Charlie, former Christie campaign manager Bill Stepien, former deputy chief of staff Bridget Kelly have won a court battle over their refusal to provide documents to the legislative panel investigating. John Wisniewski, Democratic Assemblyman, is co-chair, and he's apparently said the committee hasn't made a final decision as to whether it's going to try to get these documents from them. Do you think they will? And if they don't get those documents, isn't this a huge fundamental loss to the committee's investigation?
I think their decision is going to be based on private discussions they'll have with the U.S. Attorney's Office. I think they've had I wouldn't say coordination is too strong of a word, but they've been able to avoid overlapping. I think that there's been some discussion to avoid overlapping interests. So if they do pursue it, they've probably gotten a kind of tacit green light from the U.S. Attorney's Office. If they don't, it's because it kind of signals to me that the U.S. Attorney's Office is negotiating closely with Stepien and Kelly.
Bottom line here, we're 4.5 months in, I think. So far, no smoking gun implicating Governor Christie? Bridget?
No smoking gun. And it looks as though perhaps a smoking gun will not appear. I don't know, however, that is the go-ahead that people think it is. I think that, you know, Mary, a lot of damage has been done to both the Christie administration and to Governor Christie's own personal presidential aspirations. There doesn't, in my mind, and I think in the mind of voters, need to be a direct line that the governor said, close down this bridge. I think that what we've seen over the past 4.5 months is that an unflattering characterization of the administration has emerged that is at odds with the product that Chris Christie had marketed to the country. And right. So when he went out to California or Iowa or wherever, the idea that he was doing things differently and that narrative included bipartisan cooperation and a kind of inclusive agenda, I think that, you know, as we learn more about the inner workings of the administration and how it operated and kind of the petty and parochial politics that mm-hmm. were commonplace, does that mean that, you know, the governor is home free, or does it mean that, you know, now that we know how the administration works, that you know, that leaves a bit of a distaste in our mouth?
So, right. Charlie, where is Christie in the polls these days?
Well, I think he's moved to the sort of single-digit, second-tier status. There was a bright bump there from a Fox News poll a couple of weeks ago, but mm-hmm. basically he's down there with the Huckabees. And I think Bridges' point's well taken. I think I'd like to add one more to that, and that is the managerial competence that he sold, that he's the one who can break the gridlock, not only with a bipartisan formula, but, you know, he was the adult in the room. He's the one who can bring people to the table and cut through the Gordian knot of Washington politics, because we did it in Trenton. And I have the managerial competence to do that. Well, now we know we have people, if you even accept his version of events, or the version of events put out by Randy Mastro, the New York lawyer who was hired to do an internal investigation, if you accept that version of events, then you had people, rogue agents, on right under his nose carrying out a crackpot scheme mm-hmm. right under his nose. And I think that hurts him.
Let's talk about government and management and the proposed budget. There is, at last check that I saw anyway, an $807 million shortfall, which has led to a downgrade in the state's debt. Well, how did we get here, Bridget?
Well, I think, you know, how we got here is that the state has continued to spend money but has overestimated revenue. And I think part of that has been because while most of the nation has recovered from the recession in terms of the jobs created, New Jersey has only replaced 37% of the jobs that we lost, according to the Star Ledger. And so I think that, you know, what this means, too, is that you have all these, in addition to Bridgegate and thinking about the governor's political future moving forward, you have not just the managerial struggles that Charlie was talking about, not just the political struggles that I was talking about, but then when you look at the actual record and you have this $807 million budget gap, when you have this downgrading of the state's bond rating, mm-hmm. and now you have the governor announcing that he's going to need to increase fines and fees in 24 separate categories after, you know, making a speech and pledging that there would not be those increases, you know, this paints a much more dire and drastic picture than the perception that we had of Governor Christie six Absolutely. Months ago.
Right.
And what I kind of think is most important about this is Charlie was talking about him falling into that kind of single-digit number. We have to remember that before Bridgegate, Governor Christie was the leading contender for the
right.
Republican nomination, that when he was going head-to-head against Senator Clinton, the likely Democratic nominee if she runs, that he was sometimes ahead of her in those polls. What we have is that people throughout the country know the governor and formed an opinion about him that initially was positive. And now that opinion is largely negative. That's different than having a candidate who's in the single digits, who has not yet made their case to the people, who hasn't peaked yet.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's really difficult to change people's minds back, much more difficult than it is to make an impression. If anyone can do it, I think it's Governor Christie, but I think mm-hmm. it is a very, very difficult challenge that he faces.
Okay, let's switch gears for just a minute. We're going to go back to the elections today. We've got Ronnie on the line. Ronnie, I take it you lived in Trenton at one point?
Yeah, I lived in Trenton in the 50s. I come back occasionally. I'm from D.C. I work at the U.S. Department of State. Mm-hmm. I've been all over the world, and when I come back here, I want to cry. It is just disgusting what's happened in Trenton.
What do you think of the elections today, Ronnie? Have you examined the candidates, and is there anybody there, if you have, that that perhaps offers some hope?
Well, I know, like the Hamilton Township mayor, didn't he go to jail? They're all going to jail, it seems like, because it's just a corrupt machine.
Ronnie.
Now, at state, I worked for Hillary Clinton, and I, you know, she didn't do anything. And I look around and I see that these candidates are just bizarre.
Like, all right, Ronnie, I want to thank you for the call. We're up against the clock a little bit. But again, Charlie, this is kind of what we were talking about earlier in the hour. Sometimes there's just a sense of, it's not changing. You know, who's going to really turn my particular city around?
Right. He really put his finger on I think a lot of people in the day-to-day lives here just kind of accept there's a resignation that this is, you know, corruption is part of the air we breathe. But people that have left and come back and just are appalled at how really bad it's gotten, in particularly in the urban areas. And again, it's just going to be, you're going to really need somebody to step up and be able to corral the different interests and make a compelling case going forward. I am, you know, given, especially as Bridget mentioned earlier, in an environment where money is not available, where resources are not available, it's a very difficult challenge.
I'd also like to get to a tweet from Joseph. He writes, who's the best candidate to help Camden in the 1st District, and how will they do it? Bridget?
Who is in the 1st Congressional
District? The 1st Congressional District, yep.
Mary, I don't endorse candidates, and mm-hmm. I don't know that it actually matters. I think that in that 1st Congressional District, Donald Norcross will be the congressman there.
Mm-hmm.
And so, there is this perception, and I think that the kind of stranglehold that Mr. George Norcross has on that area is so strong that if you're fighting those battles, you don't start it at the 1st Congressional District. You may start in, for example, the city of Camden, or changing some of those other municipalities in which, Republicans have a bit of an edge, so that they are competitive with Democrats. I think it is very, very difficult, given the vast resources that George Norcross brings to the table, to have any sustainable change in particularly in that congressional district race.
All right. I'd like to thank Joseph for the tweet and Ronnie for the call earlier. Let's get back to statewide issues. In the news this week, gun control in New Jersey. It's been about a year and a half since the massacre at Sandy Hook Elementary School. And after passing the assembly twice, legislation to reduce the size of ammunition magazines has passed the state Senate. So it now goes back to the assembly and then on to Governor Christie's desk. And essentially, magazine size, the maximum size would go from 15 rounds to 10. Will Christie sign this, do you think, Charlie?
I doubt it. He didn't support it the first go around. He still has his eye on the national primary or for the 2016 race. And for him to sign something like that would be, that would just be devastating. He would be pariah number one with the gun lobby and gun rights enthusiasts. If you look at his Twitter feed, you have the Second Amendment groups and gun enthusiasts just hammering him all day, lobbying all day for him to not sign that bill. And I think that's, that may be a distortion of the on the grand reality out there, but I do think it gives us a taste of the political climate we face nationally. So I don't think it has a chance.
What do you think, Bridget?
I agree. I mean, I think particularly that because, and I think that we've seen this kind of competitive interest in which the majority opinion in the state of New Jersey conflicts with the majority opinion of the National Republican Party, and I think that this is probably a case on point. Certainly, there are gun rights advocates in the state of New Jersey who do not want to see this passed, but I think that in a state like New Jersey, there has been significant pressure to reduce magazine size. But when you look at states like Iowa, New Hampshire, when you look at states like North Carolina, states that are crucial in that presidential nomination process. Signing this would really antagonize the NRA. It would turn all of that money away from Governor Christie's presidential campaign. And, you know, even if he decides eventually not to run, I don't think at this point he's willing to make that decision, and that's effectively what this would be doing.
Okay, we've got just a couple minutes left, but let's touch briefly on the Transportation Trust Fund. $3.5 billion in transportation projects are funded through 2015, but looking at 2016, that fund is short over $600 million again. How did we get here, Charlie?
We got here because for a couple of reasons. One is there had been, over previous administrations, borrowing of surplus from the Transportation Trust Fund to balance the state budget. Secondly, there hasn't been an increase in New Jersey's gasoline tax, I don't think ever, since the creation of the Transportation Trust Fund in the 1980s.
And we enjoy that in New Jersey, by the way.
We do. It's a
maybe not for long.
We have the lowest gas tax in the, I think the second lowest. I didn't commit that to memory, but we have one of the lowest in the country. And so we overbooked a lot of projects on top of that. So, yeah. You know, we have this kind of confluence of severe need and lack of money. And also standing in the middle of this, you have a governor who, again, with national aspirations, does not want to go into the big show with supporting any kind of tax increase, broad-based tax increase,
okay.
Even though most of that tax would be paid by out-of-state. I wouldn't say most, but a substantial number of people from out-of-state coming up the turnpike would pay it.
So a quick yes or no answer. Is that gas tax going up, do you think?
I think there's a window for it. There is an argument to be made. Remains to be seen. I think there's an argument maybe where Christie might be forced to sign it or put it on the ballot and let the voters decide.
Got to stop you there. We've been taking a look at New Jersey politics, mayor's races, congressional races, Bridgegate, etc. We'd like to thank Charlie Style, political columnist for NorthJersey.com, and Bridget Harrison, professor of political science and law at Montclair State University. Thank you so much for joining us.
You're more than welcome.
Thank you.
We invite you to join us on Facebook and Twitter and check out our podcasts. Just head to our homepage, whyy.org/radiotimes. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan in for Marty Moscowane.